Welcome to the Thriving Farmer Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Kilpatrick. Our mission is to inspire, educate, and celebrate sustainable farming. We believe that you can build a profitable, sustainable farm that gives you true farm freedom. Join us as we talk to farmers, innovators, educators, and entrepreneurs to glean their top takeaways in business and life. All right, so today joining me is Robert Arnold from Pleasant Valley Farm. Robert, welcome.
Thank you. Yes, happy to be here.
So, Robert, give me a quick overview of Pleasant Valley Farm.
So, Pleasant Valley Farm was started by my parents, Paul and Sandy Arnold, in around 1988 with purchased land in Argyle, New York. They own about 60 acres, grow on approximately tillable acres, and we really only grow on four and a half every year of like actual production. We have three 34 by 150 high tunnels and a larger remote propagation house as well.
Okay, and you guys do four season vegetable production, correct?
Yeah, so we always had grown some food kind of season extension. My parents are known for pushing the boundaries of when we have produce earlier in the year. Markets used to be pretty constrained to summer months, and like going into October was like crazy. But over the years and decades, my parents pushed that boundaries until 2006. Our farmers markets on their own actually went year round because we started having more vendors that were not just farmers, and they pushed that. And so our customers started asking us, "Hey, you're going to be there, right?" Sure. The roots that always had crops all went along, and we'd always done like spinach and small hoop houses. So we really went like, we jumped right in. We started doing salad mix and pushing year round. And we've been, 2006. What is that? Almost 14 years now doing winter growing. Mm-hmm. We were probably some of the first farms really, especially in this part of the country doing that. You know, you were also one of those at that same time, but.
Yeah. Well, I think Seth Jacobs was kind of like, he was doing more of like mesclun mix and spinach. And then your parents really started doing the roots and adding the lettuce mix. And I think that was the major.
Oh, we definitely had the upper hand with the really well done root cellar that we upgraded not long after. And we rented space to you guys, rented space to Seth Jacobs and that kind of stuff until we got to a point where we filled the whole thing. And you guys had your own systems by that point. Yeah.
We had our own 40-foot containers. So, yeah.
Yeah, we sell year round to two farmers markets and then one that runs May to October on Wednesdays.
Okay.
So that's, and then 10% of our sales is essentially wholesale.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about what happened to you guys a couple weeks ago when your farmers market just said we're shutting down for the week.
Yeah. So, things were kind of slowly going downhill in the United States with people getting crazy about the virus and things going on and weren't sure what was going to be open or not. A lot of daily different mandates coming from our own governor in New York State. And then, of course, the central government. And apparently Thursday morning, our governor had put out a notice that like any functions over 500 people should be shut down. So apparently our farmers market board got that. I didn't. A lot of people didn't see that message, decided that it fell under those guidelines, just local, whatever they had to make a decision at that time. And so our biggest market on Saturday was shut down Thursday evening. And so by that point, we'd already harvested a whole bunch of stuff for that market. It was our biggest market. So that means, more than half our income was basically canceled. And we had to make a decision on how to handle that by Friday and talk to customers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right. So tell us what you did.
So right away, we crafted a newsletter that went out and put up Facebook messages that basically said, "Hey, market's canceled. We're working on options." And then we threw out a form with Airtable that just asked them questions like, what do you want to buy from us? How do you want to get from us? We can do home deliveries. We can do a pickup location, or you can call us or just try to find a place to set up our stand in a different location and then just have people come there. We got probably by Friday midday about 70 responses on that form from our customers. It should be noted that in general, we get somewhere between 200 and 300 customers probably at Saratoga Market on a Saturday. And then we took that information in from there, then put out another Airtable form offering a pickup option in Saratoga. So a pre-order basically, and then also home delivery. And we didn't charge for either of these things. We just said, here's our produce, come buy it, we'll get it to you somehow. We know you need food. We know you don't want to go to grocery stores. So we're here as an option to make it simple and convenient.
And talk to us a little about Airtable, because I know you and I both are geeks about it, but some people may not know about it.
Yeah, I'm a total when it comes to that kind of so we had a little bit of an issue because we are a pretty fully diversified farm of almost 40 products year round. So putting all that into an Airtable form that's not meant to be a checkout system essentially meant that we broke things down a little bit on some of our more popular items versus not popular, and basically put all the popular items in a list of like spinach, how many bags do you want with the low quantity selector, and then that all the way down through. And then there was things like baskets of turnips and random other things that I did then just put as a multi-select option, and then people in the in a comment box would write what they wanted for quantities. So this required me manually going through, adding up their order, putting it into a part of the form that had the dollar amount, and then I would actually email their order directly back to them, set this record function that I used, and would tell them this is your approximate amount. Of course, 10 items are weighed, so we had to then weigh each item, and then I had to re-update the order as we went along with their new total. So there that was definitely a communication and a process we had to work through that first week of, your order is probably going to be around $25. Just wanted to give them something because they didn't really know at that point unless they added up manually themselves and they had asked for weight items.
All right. So you've got this program Airtable, and Airtable is pretty much like a Excel on steroids, right? Because it allows you to use all this other aspects, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the steroids part of the Excel comparison is that it does a lot of auto reporting or auto grouping or auto filtering that you have to spend a lot of time in Excel to make work. So the great thing is I can put all these orders in, they're all there in a list, and I can easily sort and filter, tag things, put check boxes to say done or not done, or categorize things as I go. So it's definitely way better than just using the Excel sheet.
Mm-hmm. And you actually use that to manage part of your farm as well. And you manage your...
Yeah, we're trying to build out more and more with this small functions. We tend to, because we're so diversified and such small pieces everywhere, you kind of have to take either kind of generalized aggregate information into a form versus like, let's just quantify everything, which is literally impossible. You'd have to hire a 4-acre farm to keep all the data. So we try to break down sections of things and keep track of certain points so that we can, if we need to, go back and pull records out and quantify. And a lot of it is just double checking, right? How are we actually doing on this crop? Oh, well, we know we did this, this, and this, and then you can just kind of cap, you know, do a general calculation that tells us where we're at instead of like having everything all the time.
Exactly.
So we use it for seeding records, use it for greenhouse records, use it for keeping track of, we use it to make print signs for markets. It has the custom template thing. So all of our, for the video things, you know, you can make things like this or an Airtable and things like that. It's pretty simple and it allows us to put all of our data in one spot. And actually on our website, if you go to it, you can see under our produce availability, Airtable embeds with all of our crops with table and with photos and what's available in season and that kind of stuff.
pvfproduce.com, and then you want to go to
it's under farm and then what we grow.
Actually, you have to go in under, you got to type in Pleasant Valley Farm, and for some reason the first one didn't come up. All right, and then you go into farm and then
what we grow.
Okay. Yep. I see. Exactly. Yep. That's how it's all built out. Very nice. Yeah.
Also right now we're using it as intake forms for conferences to request my parents to speak at, intake forms for, you know, workers to sign up for jobs. You name it. It has so many features and functionalities. I use it in my own business to keep track of inventory and sales and orders and other things like that as well.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so that's what you did the first week. You took all the orders in, then you were packing them in your wash and pack station, and then you just delivered them around town. Is that how that worked?
Yeah, so this was March 14th. We took in 38 pre-orders and 16 home deliveries. And essentially we met in a parking lot of the store. We got permission to park in. Customers came within an hour and picked up all their orders, paid for them on the spot. They're all pre-bagged. And then I went out and did home deliveries. In the Washington station, we basically set up a mini market in kind of a half circle. And people just went around and picked a bag, you know, like you would going to a market and shop and put in your own bag, except they had an order list.
Yeah. And then you did a final check and then you put those in a box to go.
Well, final check came with the third week.
Okay. All right. So then, all right. So that was the first week. And
the first week was more accurate because it was literally, yeah, that was the first week.
Yeah. Okay. So then you did the deliveries for that week. And then you decided you need software after that.
Yeah. I knew from the start also that, you know, this was approaching over 50 orders, and that's a lot to just deal with the communication with customers. Also, customer experience was they love the forms, but they had no way of getting their order amount. They couldn't see a lot of pricing easily, and photos stuff. There was no photos. There was no descriptions. All that kind of stuff was difficult, and just a lot of extra information needed to be gotten across. So we transitioned then to me researching what's out there, talking to people, seeing what's out there. I think I talked to you, and I looked at all the options, and so we moved to local line is an option for the next week.
Yeah. Okay. So then talk to us about what made you pick local line over some of the other options out there.
So I liked that local line had the ability to help with home deliveries. They're a little more focused on that, I felt, with some of their offerings. So like they had like delivery route planning, which we can get into the limitations and details later, but they had the ideas that fit what we wanted. We didn't want to sell through this platform to our restaurants and wholesale people. So having separate stores or price lists wasn't as important to us, and we didn't think would be for a while. So, you know, something like Barn to Door offers you unlimited price lists, whereas Local Line charges you per price list. Mm-hmm. So that was a major feature that we didn't have to choose between to start with. And we also felt that Local Line had a lot of options for things beyond, like if we wanted to do these home deliveries and start doing sourcing from other people, and including that, they had the features in the software to help kind of do that and just build into farmers markets. If our whole farmers market went to using this, you know, it had that ability to just move right over, and our customers didn't have to set up new accounts. They didn't have to deal with different software. They were already all ready to go.
So it's much easier to scale this and add other people as you went.
Yeah. And also I like the feature that you could embed their stuff on our website. You know, it's like other ones don't have that option, or like force you to use their website, or like really want you to use like entire, like you can set up your whole website and domain to them. I already had a website set up for the farm. I just wanted to embed it into the store, and they had those easy to use buttons that just right on there, or the whole embed, which actually works pretty well. It was pretty easy. So nice. There's a few features that I would say on the techie side that I liked versus other offerings.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about training your customers. So obviously part of this, you've done this a couple of weeks now. How has been that process of making sure the customers, because this is a brand new experience for you as a farm and also for the customers as well.
Yeah, customers, a lot of customers don't have a clue about how we do things or when stuff is harvested, or I mean, most people are amazed every week when we tell them that we harvested this stuff yesterday. They're like, how do you do that? And they're like, I'm like, you know, this is a grower only market, right? We can't just import this from another state. But honestly, our iPads, we always have photos of the tunnels, and we go, this is how we do it. And I go, oh, wow, that's really cool. And we talk about the root cellars and stuff like that. So our customers kind of had an idea, but I mean, I get two, three people a week that have no idea how we grow stuff. So with that, it took a little bit to tell people, hey, we need to get your orders in by Friday. We have to be able to do that to pull them. And most people are completely understanding. It's most of the time dealing with people who forget. and want an order. And it's like, what are you going to tell this customer at 3 p.m. on Friday when you're just about to go down to pack and they just put in a $50 order?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, and the one thing that makes that okay is because you are also providing for farmers markets as well. So you're able to just pull down some of that inventory. But if someone was cut picking and packing to order, that would be a completely different story.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't necessarily have as much of a problem with inventory because we, right now, I mean, we're pretty fortunate that this warm weather kicked in early March. And by the time all this virus stuff hit, our tunnels and everything was going gangbusters.
Yeah.
We've been able to easily match the demand that has come from all this without an issue with, especially on the green side. And we had an abundance last year in the root cellar crop, root crops. So abundance last year in the root cellar crop, but training customers to know how to sign up. We didn't get enough sales. We didn't get a couple sales last week for sure because we didn't put out a full newsletter. We didn't want to spam our customers just more sales stuff because a lot of our, you know, we have more than just customers on our newsletter. So we didn't. We just used the messaging systems within Local Line and stuff like that. And I missed a few people. And they're like, where are the orders? And I'm like, well, we did in the previous newsletter and told you that this is something we are continuing. Here's our store. You know, so now it's just, we're going to have to reinforce that this week and say, listen, we're not going to send you a newsletter every week because you're probably getting enough emails right now from other people about all this virus crap. So that's why communication to customers worked well because we did have a pretty solid newsletter list, but we don't use it as much as we should. And our Facebook is pretty well trafficked as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instagram is building, but I feel like that's not really a customer platform. That's more of a business to business platform for us.
So talk to us a little bit about how this has changed your harvest pack procedures.
I think on the harvesting and the washing, it's changed almost nothing. The packing is changed in that we essentially now have to deal with three markets instead of two on a Friday. So we've morphed into treating it more like a third market. The first week was just bonkers. We just harvested as much as we could, threw it in the cooler, pulled out and pulled from as many crates as needed to fill the orders, and then reweighed, repacked, reharvested, figured out how to do the split the next day. And the second week was much the same, except that week we had to do a two market splitting outside of one because the Saratoga market actually started up again after everyone realized that, well, it actually is just a grocery store and it's actually safer than a grocery store.
Yes.
And the mall allowed us to move outside. We were inside of a mall, which was a great location. And one of our markets had both markets moved outdoors and spacing properly and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we tried to push the crew to get done by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon so we could spend the last couple hours pulling all the orders and packing the bags. So it definitely changed the most on how we pack the cooler during the harvest day and then packing so we can pull out and then preparing for markets from that. So moving towards treating it like a third market, having a separate list of stuff for that, and then having a third location in the cooler are on their way towards making that just seem pretty normal to us. But like all the washing, packing, harvesting, like we were already pulling that kind of stuff anyway. We just wash more greens.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to share numbers, but talk to me about percentages of what this has done to your sales, because you've been pretty amazed by how much this has actually pushed your sales up.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it's in every sense a third market. It's actually pulling in more than the average winter market for us. In our winter markets, almost equal our summer markets in some of our locations. So it is very much increased our sales to more of a summer week. I would say, like, if we were doing our normal Friday, Saturday combo market and then the Wednesday market, it equaled that in our normal deposits. And our bank this week says, like, where did you get all this cash? And we're like, farmer's market.
It's those diamonds your parents smuggled back from the cruise.
yeah. Well, they didn't go many places after the virus hit, so.
Yeah. But actually mention that a minute, too, because your parents have been gone through. I mean, they just got back this last week.
They got back from Dubai last Thursday night, so they're kind of in quarantine for a couple of weeks, of course. But in all, they were likely safer than we were. Everything was sanitized. It was a ship full of a lot of elderly people, so, like, their protocols were extreme. Like, it was crazy what they had to do. So yeah, all this started while my parents were gone. We were here running the farm, doing the day-to-days, my sister and I, and intern who did all the dailies. But the administrative work was all in me, pretty much setting all this up and getting all the messaging out and handling all of that. Like, they were on a crazy schedule. They were near, you know, in the Indian Ocean. So when we were like 11 p.m. at night, they were like just getting up. And mm-hmm. then when we were going, getting up in the morning, they were late evening. So we didn't have a lot of time during the day to ask questions. It was pretty much like, should we go for this? Go for it, make it work. And then they'd get a report when they got up the next morning that, well, hey, we actually did do, you know, 50 orders and packed them all.
Yeah. So talk to me a little about the home delivery. I mean, that's relatively simple. Were you just delivering in people's, into their houses, or were you just delivering into a cooler, or how were you actually doing the exchange, I guess?
Communication has improved with our, especially with software saying like, hey, if it's a home delivery, please leave a cooler out, leave a check. And that kind of stuff. And customers have, I've been surprised how well customers have actually transitioned to this. I mean, all of the customers, there's like no problems. Like it was pretty easy. Most of them had checks ready, especially as they got more used to it, pinned to their mailbox outside or just sitting under the chair, under the mat, that kind of stuff. The home deliveries, though, we kept it to just Saratoga market right now, not doing both. The logistics of just me doing the one home deliveries, and that's where the demand is. That's where there's more people. There's twice my people in Saratoga. The demographics are all upper middle class, so they're all just wanting to stay home and order stuff, and they like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're not charging a delivery fee.
We are not charging a delivery fee. I can get into the financial comparison in a minute on the return on that, but we basically just charge a dollar bag fee right now. And we use paper bags. Some orders have up to 3 or 4 paper bags, just regular grocery bags. We're getting them for about 5 cents for a large one, I think, through one of our local distributors. Of course, New York moved to, you know, banning plastic bags at a very opportune time. Now that we all need to be safe and hygiene related, there's no more plastic bags to keep things separate. definitely some irony running around with that. But I mean, I don't mind paper so much. We're going to have to deal with wet products and bagging. That was definitely something to think about. Right now, we only have a couple things that are really wet that aren't in bags. There's a lot of, you know, I think loose restrictions in the law about how to deal with produce, but some of it's an imaging thing with customers, and we just don't want to have to explain, you know, law is kind of gray on how you can produce bagging, and don't want to have to explain why we're using plastic bags. So we just went full paper. Home deliveries, they are a bit of a logistical nightmare to plan out the routes without some good software, and Local Lion has a limit, same as Google APIs do with their mapping software, to 10 locations. First week we had 16, second week we had 24, and this past week we had 36.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in terms of the time and how long it took, we're now planning on approximately 5 hours to deliver them all around Saratoga. And I split stuff into 4 zones around Saratoga. And we don't charging a fee, but we did do a minimum order amount of $15 for the closer in Saratoga and $20 for a little bit of the outer. And customers have had no problem with that at all. In fact, I haven't had to tell anyone or no one's complained about it. No one's asked a question. And very few have even come close to those limits.
Yeah. I mean, you were telling me you had some massive orders.
Our largest order this past week was $192.
Yeah.
We abandoned bags. I brought the stuff in 2 big bulk crates, and then they dumped them into coolers and stuff at their house. It was a family, and it kind of looked like they were packing up to leave. And so they just wanted a whole bunch of stuff, and they were thrilled. Like the local stuff, they were absolutely thrilled with this. We're seeing a little bit of like every other week ordering now.
Okay, interesting. So you're starting to see more of a cycle.
Yeah, and I think people are also figuring out how much they need. But I mean, a lot of people spend $300-$400 a week in groceries. So spending $100 on a bunch of produce is actually pretty cost effective. But our average this week, I think, was $50 in order for home deliveries because of that. Pre-orders hanging still around like $30 to $40 for the market pickups. A lot of that's just sales that are turned around from people coming to just doing the convenience to pick it up. Mm-hmm. I think there's an uptick in the sales because people count on it. A lot of people don't know when they're going to get there on a Saturday, and they don't know how much stuff they need to buy after the market if they don't get it. Sometimes we sell out of something, but this, when they place an order, they know and they feel confident. And so they're actually ordering a few extra things than they normally would have.
So actually, if you guys ended up stopping doing home deliveries, would you still keep with the pre-orders?
I think it might be the other way around. Okay. But, interesting thing is many of the customers that first week were like, are you going to continue doing this, even if not? Because we like going to the farmer's market. And most of these customers were $25 to $35 customers when they came, but they're busy. I mean, successful people are usually busy. They have kids. It's, so they can only come twice a month sometimes. So this home delivery thing, they're kind of like, we're happy to do a, $30 order a week if you can just still do home delivery. So something we'll be evaluating. Obviously, we have a few months of just people wanting stuff no matter what anyway. But the pre-orders, maybe. I think it's going to come down to a labor thing and if it's worth it. And if people are to come into the market, then is it really worth us doing that extra labor for the income? And do we feel the value is there? And do our, we might get a lot. I know customers that couldn't make it till later in the market and they were just not coming because they couldn't make it till later feeling they couldn't get stuff. And now they're like, I can pre-order and just come when I can. And I don't have to try to plan. This is great. It takes a lot of stress and planning off of it.
Have you seen any influx of new customers, new people?
I think there's been a few, but I'd say in large measure, this is long-term customers wanting to get their produce.
Yeah.
I know for sure that probably, I'd say 10% new customers maybe.
Okay.
And again, it's tough to say. Some of them could have only come 3 times last year to the farmers markets and they just didn't make it the other times. And is that a new customer? I mean, they're a customer probably we never would have gotten haven't we had the service, but they're still a customer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they know about the markets, or some are people that used to come to the markets when they could make it, and now they're in senior housing and they can't leave. So it's definitely a broad spectrum, but the vast majority are loyal, dedicated customers that usually come to the market.
Have you looked at the Road Warrior app? It's roadwarrior.app.
I haven't. Mainly it was just due to time and I had to think about how to plan it out. And there were some other logistics, a few people are like, I will meet you a place. So I have to call them. So I am going to be looking at that as to an automation. And I also wanted to talk to the local line people about, I gave them options for how they could overcome this. And I've just been using Google Maps straight up.
Gotcha.
Filtering out, breaking it into groups. And actually I threw everything into Airtable and put it up on a map and then separated by geographic region where I knew delivery routes I would do. Saratoga, you can break apart by major roads pretty easily.
Yeah.
And keep it into localized areas. And then I just manually put stuff back in. So that is just helpful to me because now when I see an address, I'm getting better at where it is and they can help me just plan things a little bit easier in the future. Oh, it took me about an hour, I'd say, to do route planning for 36 orders. Mm-hmm. And that got, some of it got tossed out the window when I had delays, but I definitely am going to be looking for an option like that to do more route plan delivery. It's also about having a good GPS guidance in the truck. So Google Maps is somewhat helpful in that area. I haven't looked into Road Warriors as to how that'll work.
Gotcha. So talk to us about, you're using local lines. So I know you talked about some of the improvements you'd like to see, and I know they do have a roadmap out there, but talk to us a little bit about some of the frustrations.
Frustrations were there is no way to export customer addresses for the orders for that week.
Okay.
I had to manually type them all in. At this past week, they exported them manually from the back end for me.
Okay.
And the order system, even if they took all of the customers and orders and put them on a Google Map, put them as icons and allowed you to just select and assign them to a truck and do a route plan that way, save tons of time.
Gotcha. So that's a definite aspect. Now you also said
over Google's 10. So it's just
another aspect was the per pound things per pound, or you were talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So now we can get into some of our logistical changes and efficiencies.
Yeah.
We moved to having a second step in bagging so that we made sure quantities were right. There were some errors the second week on quantities. If someone ordered 2 lettuce, they got 1. And that's because someone wasn't reading the order properly. Also, everything's alphabetical in local line when it prints out on a customer order sheet. So that meant that, you know, arugula would be first and then it'd be carrots. Well, things are grouped by greens and then we never know what order things are in. And we're not arranging our line of produce alphabetically. That's just ridiculous. So
well, and you want
I went in,
top.
Yeah. So I went in and put in before every name in local line, a grouping, A, B, C, D. And then so that all the root crops are grouped in A, all of the sub root crops like celeriac, kohlrabi, sweet potatoes that are not our typical baskets are in group B, and there's greens in group C, and then other stuff in group D. So that helped significantly. So when someone started, they could just go right down the line and there'd be less jumping around or missing an item. And then we used trays this past week so that everything was put into a tray, brought to a table, and then someone would load it in the bag while looking at the order sheet and making sure everything went into the bag correctly.
Okay, like a cafeteria almost.
Right. So that made sure that all the heavy stuff were on the bottom, all the medium stuff was in the middle, and light stuff on the top. And then if you had multiple bags, you could then appropriately spread it out. And then it went towards, we rolled and stapled the tops of the paper bags. We felt that having open bags was not very clean or, especially leaving on people's porches. We didn't, I felt like we were delivering a more secure package when it was stapled together. And then this week we moved to printed labels. They had the customer name on it, the order IDs, our own order number on them. We did everything 1, 2, 3, 4, starting from 1 each week. So we kind of can easily order them in crates because local line does a 6-digit number and people looking at 2 6-digit numbers and comparing which one's higher or lower takes a lot more time to figure out than just 2 versus 3.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So then at the farmer's market for pickup, everything gets arranged behind the table in order, 1, 2, 3, all the way up to whatever 36 or 48 orders we had. And then in the order sheet, I have the comparison with all the numbers. So on every sticker, they have the price, they have the name, they have our logo, they have the 2 order numbers, ours and the one from local line. And then I have some extra tagging for different things.
Very cool. And I assume you're doing that extra, all those printouts in Airtable then, right?
I am not. I'm just using the straight Avery, my Avery website for, we have shipping labels. That's what we had. So that's what we used.
And then a mail merge.
Yeah. And then a mail merge from a CSV export. And then that was super simple. Airtable could, but then I did the match with the label template and that's difficult with Airtable. So it's very simple to just use Avery and then it's there for the next week. And I just do a new mail merge.
Very cool.
Yeah. That worked out really well. The only extra thing is we have to hand write more than one bag. So, that's where another thing of adding bag 1 of 3 to know to go look for. Sweet potatoes, we're discussing to put them in the cooler instead of keeping them in the warm. So we don't have to have a third bag for sweet potatoes, which is what we've been doing. We kind of discussed it and we think it's going to be fine. Putting them in for one night won't reduce their longevity.
Yeah.
And so many customers don't know.
And are putting them in anyway. So.
Yeah. So we also think we're going to put a label. If we do sweet potatoes, we might still do them separately in a bag with a separate label that says please keep. So it might actually help us give more information to our customers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now on the efficiency note, we did extensive numbers and data figuring out how profitable this whole enterprise is for us.
Because what's an Arnold without knowing the numbers?
Yeah. It's like, well, we're doing all this work, but does it make us any money? Are we breaking even? Are we selling, $2,000 more of produce for because we have $2,000 worth of labor?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and that's, something out there. People saying, yeah, our sales are crazy. We're doing all this stuff and we're selling all this stuff. But it's like, well, that's great. But are you actually making more money or are you just having more sales? Because you're not efficient handling this uptick because your processes weren't planned for that. So we've improved a lot. So we broke everything down based on the labor input and then some other ancillary costs like bags, labels, extra wear and tear in the vehicle. So we just did straight mileage at the rate for this year. And then administrative time kind of broke down. How much time do I spend with each customer? How much time do I spend in each invoice to finalize it? And then multiply that out by how many orders and stuff we got. So our first week, so we broke that down, also did the same for the markets. So we have a comparison exactly for markets versus pre-orders and stuff like that. So our typical markets are around somewhere between, let's say $6 and $7 generated per dollar of input.
Okay.
So yep. Cost, labor, everything. If you put a dollar in, you get around $5 to $7 out.
Yes.
So Saratoga being a little better, it's a longer market. We can do it with less people. Glens Falls, we had higher labor because we had some labor shortages. One of our workers got stuck on vacation. No one felt sorry for her. And so we had to get people from the farm, which meant we were paying our travel time. So mm-hmm. we had some increased costs at our farmers markets actually because of this, which made them look worse. But like, for example, one market, $5.67 of output for each dollar, and the other market was $7.04.
Okay.
So our first week doing this work was for pre-orders, $3.47 of output.
Okay.
Home deliveries were $1.81. We delivered in two different days because we took orders late because we wanted to get as many people as possible. It was basically the service to customers. So it was horrible. We had extra mileage. I had extra labor for 2 days, that kind of stuff. Second week was $5 for pre-orders.
Yep.
And $2.68 for home deliveries. So we're on the way of like almost doubling. This past week, we did $5.36 for pre-orders and $5.80 for home deliveries.
Okay. I like those much better.
Yeah. We actually surpassed our one market by a dollar at output based on these. And we had this past week 46 pre-orders and 36 home deliveries.
Yeah. Now, if you're starting to add on to that a delivery fee, you're actually really start making money.
Yeah, and that might get to be eventually. Now, also, this past week, we took on products from a local cheese vendor who does like yogurt and stuff. So there is some sales that could be pulled away from that we got, you know, a percentage back on for as a fee to them. But it our numbers are starting to be a little more skewed because we're taking in other products from other vendors and offering them as a service.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now it's become almost like a little tiny enterprise for the home delivery service, which I'm sure you could outsource to somebody that just wants to spend their day driving.
Yeah. We're talking about that. You know, I don't normally do markets. I'm only doing them because my parents are gone. And when my parents are ready to go back to markets and public soon in a week or two, then I will probably be doing full-time delivery for this kind of stuff on a Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So what else would you say to someone who's thinking of, you know, pivoting online or trying out local line?
Well, I think one, you got to know your customers. Uh-huh. You got to know what they're looking for, what they want. And you just got to be ready to respond and pivot. I mean, being ready to just take on something new is always part of that. And then being able to understand your processes, where you can fit stuff in, what's your capabilities. Obviously you can't do anything if you don't have the product to sell. And we were fortunate to have the extra product to sell at this point to handle that essentially a third market off the bat in a time when most people don't even have produce because it's winter. But software is helpful, but I think it's only helpful if you're dealing with a certain volume. I mean, if you're doing 10 to 15 orders a week and you're just a small roadside stand, it's not worth the $60 a month. I mean, it's only worth it for us because we are picking up, you know, 2 to 3 customers, 4 or 5 customers a month that would have normally not ordered. So we're paying for that 5-6 times over.
Yeah.
Just customers we wouldn't have gotten. So we're not paying $60 to then keep making what we were making.
Uh-huh.
So I think if you're small,
additional sales is what you're saying.
Yeah. Also, if you don't have complicated stuff to sell, like if you're just doing bad greens and a few other things, like maybe you have 5 to 10 products, a form is super simple. Airtable, you just put it in there, it calculates the pricing for you, and you're just doing some. I'm sure there's ways to integrate into finding more ways to mail it, send email responses and stuff like that. So then it's still not worth paying money for something that you have a very streamlined, efficient way to handle it.
But you guys do have enough products that it is worth having something that can actually start to take a little bit of that.
Oh yeah. Plus we have so many things that people don't know. Like what the heck is a rutabaga? What the heck is a kohlrabi? What does it actually look like? You know, that's where photos and having that kind of store checkout with extra information is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously if you want to do collaboration with other vendors, like you gotta have ability to put stuff in a store. Like if they tell you only have 10 available, you gotta have inventory management, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a huge aspect as well. Is that inventory
and the invoices and sending customers appropriate stuff. And if you want to handle, like, you know, promo codes and, I mean, the whole gambit, like, you just got to go that route. Now, as opposed to, like, the stuff between, there's a lot of options out there, I think, for these platforms, at least five solid ones, I think, I would say, somewhere around there, between Square or Shopify, or, you know, a lot of people using different stuff. I like the fact that Local Line is geared towards produce instead of just, some of these are more geared towards, like, restaurants, and the messaging and what's written on the, for customer checkouts and stuff like that is hard to translate into farmers market shopping. So I think it feels like people ordering from a restaurant, not their local friendly neighborhood farmer on some of that stuff. It does help that you can embed, of course, a lot of these things in your website, and then you don't have to worry about it as much. But yeah. I did like that Local Line, it's made for this. It's made for produce, and it, you know, it says a fridge and stocking up for the week and in your empty cart and stuff like that. So
yeah. Yeah, that's kind of cool. All right, Robert. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. And you actually do Farm Tech Install. That's your business. And we actually refer a lot of business to you. Talk to us about, for 2 minutes, about what you do there, because I think that actually made this super easy for you to be able to implement this for your farm.
Yeah. Well, I'm a kind of a systems guy. I'm trained in networking and setting up all the stuff to do with the internet and servers and all the stuff that's invisible when you click on a website, essentially. And so that's my background and my training. Where I've done internships and jobs, and then translating that into a farm area has been kind of my last 3 years, and helping out farms with areas that there aren't many people working on or helping with. So farm Wi-Fi, getting internet between remote buildings, a lot of cool technology in that arena that isn't expensive. Yeah. That's a big part of my business. Probably half of my business is helping people get internet around their farms, different sites and locations. Some farms have spending extra money on different connections from their local cable company, and I can reduce that with a few $100 worth of gear to one subscription.
Yeah.
So that's real return on investment. And then other half is probably monitoring, so sensors and keeping track of all different aspects of farms and enterprises, so that you can get text alerts in time, keep track of data to plan better, and just kind of know what's going on with your farm a little better peace of mind. And then the other kind of, you know, quarter or less of my business right now is building, which is helping people just kind of spec controllers and planning for things inside greenhouses and high tunnels and that kind of equipment. I don't sell all of it. I'm working towards some of that, but a lot of it's just me helping you figure out and translate all that technical jargon and spec for sizing and helping you with ideas and actually doing installs on some of it for people. Like, hey, I bought this controller. I haven't gotten to it. I just come and set it all up and teach me how to use it, you know, that kind of thing. And then irrigation controls, working with a lot of lower cost smart irrigation controls, so you can from your smartphone turn on valves and solenoids and stuff like that for low cost. Lots of this stuff. There isn't too many things I sell that cost more than $300.
Yeah.
For all these things, sensors, controllers. I do a lot of camera systems for people too. A lot of farm stores, people want camera and Wi-Fi in their farm store. And so I do a lot of that.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest thing, a lot of people say, well, why would I need to know that information? And I'm like, well, if you lose one cooler full of product, that's thousands of dollars.
A lot of it is, it's insurance is the way to translate it. Like, you're paying money for an insurance for if your building burns down, which is really unlikely to happen. Most people rarely experience that. We certainly hear about them, but you know, this is, you're paying for a component that's actually giving you information you can use on a daily basis, and providing insurance if something goes wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Robert, I will let you go. Thanks again so much for your time today, and best of luck, and keep us updated.
Yeah, thanks. You're welcome to follow our Facebook page, check out our online store on the website, keep up to date with kind of what we're doing, and you're welcome to ask questions.
And that's pvfproduce.com, or if you just type in Pleasant Valley Farm, I think it's like the second result. I think there's a farm in Virginia, which is the other one. But yeah, you guys are the ones in upstate New York.
Yeah, we're in Argyle, New York. So you can look that up.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Robert Arnold. He's great. And, you know, he and I go back a long way. So it's always fun to be able to spend time and talk with him. So if you want to get the resources he and I talked about, we put a mini course together that we have out there for free right now about moving your farm online. Includes this episode with Robert, includes a couple different other interviews, one with Ray Tyler, one with Joe from Canada, and then Cole from Local Line that walks you through setting up your farm with Local Line. in about just 10 minutes. So, and we have a bunch more resources. So you're going to find all of that information all over at www.growingfarmers.com/tips. That's growingfarmers.com/tips. And that includes many farms' response to this. There's a whole bunch of different things, a whole bunch of different free resources. Yeah, it's a ton of free stuff over there. So many people are making their courses free around this to help farmers move online. So make sure you do hop over there. Again, it's growingfarmers.com/tips to get all the information. So there you have it, another episode in the books. So I'd love if you would hop on over to iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. Those mean everything to us. We love to hear what you're thinking. If you have a podcast guest that you can recommend, please pop on over to the Thriving Farmer Podcast website and leave us a review. That's thrivingfarmerpodcast.com.